Well, welcome to the Repos Non-League Roundup show, and we're back again. Wow, getting to the end of the season now, and probably only one more show left to go because, of course, this time next Monday it will be playoff final evening and afternoon, and people will be very happy, very sad. This time next week, of course, across all of Step 3 and Step 4, not just in the Southern League, but of course in the Isthmian Prem, sorry, Isthmian, and of course also. In the Northern Prem as well, but of course one of the sides that are in that playoff places, and of course they are fantastic friends of the show, as you well know, are Mousel, and joining us tonight, of course, we have Mr. Andrew Large, of course, with a starring role tonight. He normally only gets 10 minutes. Today he's got a full 4 hour show. What's this about? And we got the man, the myth, the living legend, of course, of press and everything, and of course he's got a little young sibling now down at Barcelona as well. Even though he doesn't like to talk about it too much because about how fantastic he is. Of course, Mr. Kevin Bishop, welcome, Kevin. And of course, then we've got a new friend of mine. Of course, he's Paul, of course, director of Mousel. So welcome, Paul.
Thank you.
And of course, coming back to us, of course, without his trophy in the background this year, this time around, of course, he's young Brian. Welcome, Brian.
I'm Brian, thank you very much.
And of course, and we're talking about the man, the myth, the legend. But of course, we like to call him Jamie Vardy. Of course, the one and only Derek. Of course, the chairman of Mousel. How are we, Derek?
Yeah, very well, thanks. Rather a busy day as usual. Just come from the ground actually. Just got here about 10 minutes ago by the skin of my teeth. But how's everyone? All right?
Okay,
Everyone
boss.
fine,
Thank
Derek?
you.
We've posted this thing on Instagram because I was in Anfield with yourself actually, and at the Media the Content Awards, and then Emma Jones presented Jamie Vardy's. I think he won Best Player, and he wasn't there, and there was no one to pick the award up. So I kindly stepped forward and received the award on his behalf. And apparently made quite a good speech. Well, so this guy who sat next to me, he works in Downing Street, and he was going to give me an invite into number 10, and he never ever got back to me. But maybe he didn't think after that speech I should go into 10 Downing Street. But then that's another story. But Emma's liked the post anyway that we sent out last night, and hopefully, if there's anybody out there, can they get this news? Because I want to get rid of this award. Every time I move it and dust it, I'm frightened to death that because they're glass, that being the ex butterfingery goalkeeper I was, I might drop it on the floor, and break the award.
Kevin, talking about those award that award evening before we go into what's gone on, of course, this season. Of course, there's no rumours behind the from what I've heard that the reason Pablo went to Barcelona is because there's no pie and mash over there.
Oh
Sure,
God, no, definitely
it'll be
not.
cheaper in Barcelona than it was in Liverpool then.
No, yeah. I think I can't remember. I think I ate his pie and Jeff ate his mash.
Guys, it was so funny. It was really funny because he sort of looked at it and went, well, what is this? It was just absolutely, all he had was the gravy. I think that was all he ate all night, just the gravy. It was quite funny. But before this season started, and we'll go to this season, before the actual season started, and of course we've come up for come up to step four. Did you guys, I mean, I'll ask Paul the question first, and Andrew, I mean, do you ever expect Mousel to be sitting here now? What are we on? 29th of April, and the regular season's over, but Mousel's still got at least one more game to go. Was we ever expecting Jake and the boys to get you into this position where it's you literally are sort of 90 minutes away from a final, 180 minutes away from step three?
Now, I've got personal views, but I'll let Andrew go first.
Okay. Well, I think we faced this season with a certain amount of caution, because I think probably, although we obviously want to be the best we possibly can be, we thought just consolidating at step four would be a fantastic achievement. And the reason for that is we're quite a small club with quite a small budget, small income, in the middle of nowhere, small centre of population. You know, we don't want to be seen as sort of punching above our weight. And I mean, I personally thought mid-table finish would be quite good. And then as the season progressed, and we realised that it's actually quite condensed, the division. You know, something like, I think I said to you before, David, that anyone from like third place down to 15th place could get in the playoffs. And when we were something like sixth or seventh with a glut of home games to go, we began to think if we win those home games, we could very well sneak into the playoffs. And that's what we've done on the final day. One goal difference. How about that? Just like last season when we won the Western League Premier Trophy on the last afternoon of the season, you know, after 38 matches. So it's fantastic to think that people have still had that belief on the field, and that there's been everything to play for in the last few weeks. We are the club going into the playoffs with 5 consecutive wins. So we've got the momentum, you could argue, even though we're playing probably the second best team in the league on their own home ground in front of anything from 1,000 to 1,500 supporters on Wednesday night, which I think will be the biggest crowd our team has ever played in front of.
Mm. And they're also unbeaten at home as well. Is that, am I right to say, in this season as well?
Hang on.
In the league, anyway. That in a minute. I'm sure that's what Jake told me the other day on Sunday. I'm
sure they are indeed. Yeah. Played 18, won 14, drawn 4. Well, they've only conceded 13 goals in 14 matches.
But one will do.
But all records are there to be smashed, David.
Yeah.
Well, if I can just say, when we went to Froome, it was a very, very close game. And we came away and Jake said, Froome will win the league. They're the best team in the league. We've just played the best side in the league. And we're under no illusion. We're going to go to Froome on Wednesday and they will give us a real hard game. But I've said this before on a number of occasions this season. Mousel on their day can beat anyone in this league and probably anyone in the league above. When they click, when they play, and the everything's right for us, they're incredible. Some of that football on Saturday was unbelievable. Some of those goals were just absolutely ridiculous. What we've struggled with is to maintain that throughout the season. And I think if we had, we could have been, may have not won the league, but we would have been pushing to win this league if we could have maintained that consistency. But what people, and I know I say this every time I come on here, people don't realise how far away we are. And it's absolutely ridiculous. And I just praise the players and the squad and the managers for what they've done this season, because it's just incredible with the logistics of getting from where we are up to where we've got to go and back has been incredible. It really has. I mean, my cousin in Liverpool, who's a big blue, he called me on Saturday night. He said, Derek, he said, I'm going to come to the playoff at Froome. I'm going to get down there because I think it's just incredible what Mousel have done. And about an hour later, I had a message off him saying, I've just looked how far it is from Liverpool and I'm not going to go down there. And then I had another message an hour later saying, I feel really ashamed of myself. I've just looked how far Mousel is. And Liverpool's an hour closer to Froome than what Mousel is. He said, I can't believe it. But you can't. People say, oh, yeah, we know where Mousel is. You're down Bristol way. Well, yeah, we are. Keep going for another 3 hours and you'll get there.
I think from when we came down, that was our halfway point, Bristol.
Yeah, that's it. We
got there. I was going to pop into my sister's on the way through because see if I can get something to eat. But I mean, take us through Saturday. I mean, I take everybody was there Saturday, and so I mean, you know, Brian, Kevin. I mean, I saw pictures of Kevin sort of running around at the end when they were celebrating. So, what was that actually like on Saturday, Kevin? I mean, you know,
I'm going to have to hold off for a second. Like, there's a mistake in my video which we're about to publish, so I've got to redo that. So I'll come back.
David, come back to me. Come back to me, David. While I buy time for Kevin.
Good and Paul and Brian, you tell me.
What I was going to say is, David, that a follow on to what Derek's just said. Yeah, the travelling. I'm going to say I spoke to you before on here about the travelling, and we all know about that. But the beauty, the absolute beauty, and the most satisfaction I get out of the second satisfaction I get out of the travelling is, of course, but we've gone away and we've won a lot of games. That's fine. But I like to talk to people, and there's people that have picked up through social media and through you on here and various other channels, people that have been down on holiday and they thought, oh, Mousel football, yeah. And they've turned up at away matches up in Malvern and down near Salisbury, all down anywhere we go, there's always a different person that will come up and they see our faces on the way out Kevin's way out west, and they obviously recognize us, and they look for Chris the drummer, they look for me hoisting flags and different things like that, and they make a point of cup, which is wonderful, and we meet so many wonderful people that are not within sort of the West Penwith or even the Cornwall area, and that's one of the absolute bonuses of being in the position we are. We've got out to the masses. We've got out to the masses.
I'm gonna tell you, we've actually got some fans in London that come to Mousel. I mean, it's incredible. They were there Saturday. They were there They were there at Salisbury, and they'll be there Froome, and they travel from London, and they follow us everywhere. They're Wimbledon fans. These lads.
We had a couple from the Isle of Man on Saturday. A couple travelled down from the Isle of Man to see us.
Yeah.
Ferries, aeroplanes, cars.
But you say about travelling, you know, I mean, you know, the Wednesday night game, of course, 7:45 kickoff. But, you know, you're leaving home as around midday. And I mean, that puts it into context
It might be earlier than midday because they've dug the road up at St Erth, which is the other side of Penzance. And no, this is true, but the coach has got to get through those traffic lights, and he's got to, because there's only one way in and one way out. So there's people, it's taken them 45 minutes to get through St Erth today, coming from Hale. So we've put this to the coach company, and they're going to assess the situation in the morning and see what it's like tomorrow. So we might be leaving a little bit earlier.
And that's only 8 miles into our journey from Mousel.
What was it like on Sunday? I think I sent a text to you. I was sitting at the O2 with the family. We were just about to go in to see take that on them. We went in to have a Frankie and Benny's at the O2, and we're sitting in there, and they're all chatting away and they're saying, what's up with you, you miserable toe rag? I said, listen, you talk. I've got more important things to look at. And I'm freaking constantly. Well, and seeing that, and one minute I'm punching the air, the next minute I've got me facing me pasta. And I said to Jake on Sunday, when we spoke on Sunday, I said, like, you know, it was crazy. I said, one minute it was 3-1 and I'm thinking, oh, this is it. We've made it into the playoffs. And then the next minute I lost signal. And then I got the signal back and it was 3-3. And it was like, oh no, what is going on? And then, you know, 4-3, 5-3, 6-3. And by the time I got to 7-3, everybody's sort of looking at me in the corner, screaming and shouting. But it was crazy stuff. What was it like?
We still didn't know that stage whether or not we were going to make the playoffs, of course, because we were relying on that result to come through.
Yeah, from Larkle. Yeah.
If you watch the video, which I've now corrected and I'm re-uploading to YouTube, there was about 5 minutes at the end when we just didn't know, and everyone was crowding around mobile phones. Radio Cornwall were there, and if you listen to the video, I've put the Radio Cornwall commentary of that moment of worrying.
That moment, yeah.
Into the video, because it was one of those moments when you kind of like, you just don't know, you can't really celebrate yet, even though you kind of just won a match 7-3.
Yeah, it was like that Manchester United, I suppose, but Manchester United, when Man City were playing Queen's Park Rangers when they...
Yeah, I was there that day, actually.
They're panicking. Yeah.
You know what? I was on a podcast last week, I was talking about this. You know, that day, we were worried about what was happening at Bolton, because if Bolton beat our result, then, or matched it, I think QPR would have got relegated. And there was about, you know, 80, 90 people in the crowd there, all looking at their phones, never knowing if the result they were looking at was the latest, because, you know, when you update, obviously you're not quite sure if you got the latest. The one guy who knew for sure was the guy with the radio, who knew for sure that he was listening to something that was live. And we all knew that was it. Then the Aguero goal went in.
But was there people there, though, on phones? You know, were people on phones sort of... I'll be honest, I found it hard because, you know, as I've said this before, I've said it to Andrew a few times as well, you know, if with like the Isthmian Prem, because I was keeping an eye on that as well, because I do the commentary there for Enfield Town and they needed the win to sit in second in the playoffs and so forth. But, so it was all clicking off there. But of course, it's so much easier with the Isthmian Prem because you go to the football web pages and all the results are in front of you. With the Southern League, of course, you've got to go onto the video printer and keep flicking it on there and trying to work out who's doing what and where, and everything comes up from a yellow card to everything else. You're sitting there, what's going on?
On this occasion, I think it's possibly quite unique, was that the player, the BBC, that they had got to the playoffs by celebrating. The BBC guy was on the air and was just looking at the players and started leaping in the air, and he realised then that obviously that the result had come through.
I haven't played back the Radio Cornwall thing, but people said to me it was very exciting that listened to it.
It was hugely exciting.
Because Peter Richmond, I mean, I've known him for years, but he's a rugby man. Because play with the wrong ball down here. We play with the egg-shaped ball. They're all egg-shaped chasers. So, but I mean, I do quite like rugby, but football's my game. I'd never be disrespectful about rugby. It's a great sport and it's all around us here. But Peter Richmond is a rugby commentator. And I think he even got very excited at Mousel doing the football.
He was mind-blowing. I was stood at the back next to him up there and I recognised his voice because when we'd been coming back from away matches in the past seasons, I'd heard his voice on there and I thought, what a wound up, excited commentator he is. And through listening to him commentating about our match, I realised who he was and I had a quick chat to him. And his knowledge of football, I mean, so even though he's rugby, he was writing notes down and I was watching him and he's bang on with football as well. He knows all about it.
And he's got a world
rugby is his game.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, he said he was out that match because I was standing quite near him.
Yeah,
that's the craziest match of football he's ever seen. It was so topsy-turvy. Yeah. And I wrote in my match report, it was chaotic because that's what it seemed like.
With the semi-final, of course, being Froome, and there might be, you know, Mousel fans that maybe can't get to Froome, and for one reason or another reason, was there ever any thought, Kevin, of maybe live streaming the game?
Sorry, Saturday's game.
No, Wednesday.
Next Saturday.
This Wednesday coming.
Wednesday.
For the semi.
We can't live stream from our video camera, A, because it's broken at the moment, and B, because we don't have a license to do that. We didn't buy the streaming package. We could do. I know what one thing we did do, which is an innovation on Saturday, is that the new reporter commentated on the whole match on TikTok. And out of vision, obviously. He didn't show the action, which is something we might do as well.
Mm.
But I don't know. Live streaming... I hate to say yes, because that would mean that I'd probably have to do it. And I've no objection to doing it, but it's one of those things, is like you're doing one thing, you can't do another thing.
And that is difficult, because I used to do it for Harlow. I used to live stream it over to Spain at the games. And then I did one, and I'd managed to keep control of myself during all these games and whatever was going to be in the same game. And a good friend of mine, he's the chairman at Romford Football Club. And if you don't know, they've just made it into the FA Vars final at Wembley.
FA Vars, yeah, they have. Yeah.
And they're playing another local side in Great Waker in Rovers. And they've been on the show, as Andrew knows, in the last couple of weeks. And they asked me to go down and film. It wasn't actually live streaming on that day, but just to film the whole game and make a video for them, you know, so they've got something to remember if they didn't get past Lincoln, et cetera, et cetera. And the game was one of the weirdest games ever, because Romford had a player sent off after 4 minutes. They went had a penalty conceded after 6 minutes, which they went 1-0 down. They equalised on 60, and then the board went up. It was 1-1. They were down to 10 men for like literally 86 minutes of this game. Got to 90 minutes. The Rides has put the flag up to say there's going to be, I think it was 8 minutes of added on time. Got to 92 minutes, and Lincoln scored. And of course, that went out of the whole of the stadium, because it was just horrendous. As you can imagine, it held on for that long. And they went straight up the other end from the kickoff and scored. And for the first time ever, I actually lost the plot on the filming. And you can hear me screaming and shouting on the actual video camera. And you just forget where you are. It's just even though it's not your side as such, it just sort of pulled you, you know, with the atmosphere of the game. So it is a difficult one. But I mean, Wednesday night, though, I mean.
Whenever anyone asks me if I can add yet another sort of level of broadcasting to the experience, yes, I could do it. But in the same way that if you ask Jamie Vardy to play in goal, I'm sure he could, but not exactly the same time as he's playing up front.
But David, the problem we've got with Kevin is, if you've seen a little bit about all the fantastic things he's done way out west, the videos and everything, he's taken us on such a journey that I'm quite convinced that a lot of people think Kevin can do anything. And he probably can.
He can.
There you go. There's a fabulous example. And David, you've got to get one of these. We must get one to you.
I've got one for you.
Magic.
And it's quite incredible. But I want to come back to the question that you asked me, Dave, because I think it's really important to say this about the club. And you know a little bit about my playing background and everything else. So when you got the response from Andrew, my corporate life and my consulting life absolutely says Andrew got it bang on. And when Derek described exactly the environmental geopolitical position that we have in a location, he got that absolutely right as well. But look, I have a very strong view on it, and I'm happy to share it with you. We should have won this league this year. And the reason is we were in front over 6-7 games, but for various reasons, we couldn't hold on to the lead. And I had said to Jake, because he said one interesting thing about a year ago, he said, Paul, this league that we've just come into is not a very, very large differential to the league we've played in. Three is different. But he said, we'll hold our own. And he was so right about that. So my comments on Jake is this. He reminds me so much of Graham Potter because of his pathway into coaching. He's a very astute, technically very gifted person. And I've always said this. I believe that a football style, it's a unique passing game. Many align it to the Manchester City Rondo process of keeping the ball at different from doing, well, high pressing from the defence into midfield into the last third of the attacking half, third of the pitch. But he's built a very, very good disciplined team. And I've felt that a lot of teams would be caught by surprise. And so, therefore, our best chance ever of winning the league was this first introduction into this level four. And if we just kept the momentum going and kept the 2-0 in front lead that we had, we'd have won this by now. So I'm not surprised where we're at. And Derek quite rightly said, and I think equally, Brian also touched on it, when we are on form, I firmly and utterly believe we can beat anybody, certainly in this league. If we get that sweet spot up front, and if we get some continuity starting early, and if we are able just to take a goal advantage, maybe in the first 20 minutes, we have a hell of a chance of winning that game. And then I'm absolutely certain we'll win the next one. It's a really interesting dynamic in the team. They're not overly cocky. They're very cautious. They're very sensible. Sometimes you heap a bit of praise on them, they get a little bit nervous. I've been told off a couple of times for saying wonderful things about them. Because they don't have an element of arrogance about them. They're very humble and they're full of humility in the playing sense and very, very focused. So I would love to have said to you, well, we've won the league, we're done, dusted. But we're not, but we're in the playoffs, but I'm very confident. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to share that because on our day, we do play an incredible game of passing. It's so similar to Manchester City on the Rondo process of keeping possession. And the boys don't panic. But we've got youngsters, some academy people been released who would still want to get back in the mainstream. They're keen to learn. The club's got accommodation and a full-time program for a number of them. We've got a dedicated teaching department in terms of the coaching process. So, you know, we should expect high standards. We should, because they have the potential and they have the talent. And they proved it, I think. It's a really wonderful situation we're in. But it's more remarkable, if I could just say this and I'll be quiet, is we are 350 miles away from London. We only have 500,000 people living in Cornwall. They're not, and really Cornwall is the hotbed of rugby. So we have to really technically and strategically work very hard to get a cluster of dedicated boys together. And the way that we do it, both remotely and together, is a logistical challenge that I think many clubs in the Isthmian League don't have to worry about. Traveling away, if Andrew will correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's 7,238 miles that we have to do.
Yep, that's right.
And I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, one of the things, Paul, I spoke when Jake came on the manager's view on Sunday, and joined the guys from Welling Garden City and Ware. And you know, and it's a bit like you said, everybody sort of falls in love with the club, et cetera, et cetera. It's quite funny when we had that conversation. They were trying to sort out a pre-season tournament down at your place, and they were both teams were going to come down on a coach.
Yeah. But can I just say this, and I must, because you've twigged something that I'm really, really proud of. As you know, the assistant manager at Exeter was once our manager, all right? And he's highly thought of in the club. But I got 2 minutes with him, about 5 minutes with him, when they had their pre-season down here. And he said, you know, we were talking about how cleverly we do one thing. We're famous for our fitness. Our boys, I think, are fitter than most of the teams in the Isthmian League. But what he said was something really interesting. And I absolutely concurred with him because we started to talk about high pressing. So high press, as Klopp will tell you, as a couple of players, teams that will tell you, you need unbelievable fitness. And he turned around and said to me, Paul, can I tell you something? we're in the professional league. We haven't been shut down so quick for so long by what happened with us with Mesut. I was shocked. Your team is so brilliant at pressing down. And I said, oh, this is so lovely. He said, no, I'm being really, really serious. You do it better than we do. And we were shocked. You absolutely caught us big time. And I think there's a lovely testimony to a club that's about 11 miles from the Atlantic Ocean.
Can I ask one question? Because it does, you know, maybe, you know, Kevin can tell me something, or even, you know, Andrew, Derek, Brian. With the scenario now is say, if it's this year, if it's this season, if it's next season, or if it's 2 seasons' time, it's 5 seasons' time, that Mars will then get into, you know, step three, maybe even step two. Do you see, because of the position of where the club is, and at the moment you've got a really great core players that travel 1 hour and 45 minutes to training on a Tuesday and training on a Thursday, do you feel that it will get harder for you as you go up the leagues to recruit players, or do you feel it might get easier to recruit players?
That's a good question.
Good question. I think there are players who would want to play for Mousel. The higher in the pyramid Mousel play, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So our ability to attract players goes up on the basis of playing standard, the higher in the league we are, but so are their financial demands.
Yep.
And added to that, the geographical radius in which they live.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's, you know, there are other ways of looking at it. Mm. One of which is to develop alliances.
Yeah, strategic partnership.
You know, with teams like Exeter City.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we were talking on Saturday even about Truro City reserves. They've got a very, very talented reserve side who are mainly 17, 18, 19 year olds. They play at step six, David, and they can't get promoted because they're a reserve side. But the gap between them and their parent club, who are at step two, is too much for them to break into the first team.
Yeah.
So here's an idea about bridging that gap. So basically, I think we should be thinking in the future about those sort of strategic alliances that benefit all parties. So this season, in the last 3 months, we've been fortunate enough to take on two youth load players from Exeter City, whose management team have very, very high hopes for them, but want them to experience what they call men's football, not academy football, men's football.
Yeah.
And they have been like a breath of fresh air. You can see the potential. So they benefited us. They benefited themselves. I've got no doubt they'll go on, you know, to go back to their club. But that's the sort of merry-go-round that you need. It's a very positive merry-go-round.
Yeah.
We've also got to bear in mind that just thinking about the stats today, we're the highest scorers in the division, David. We are ahead of both Wimborne and Froome in terms of goals scored. And we have a very high scoring player in our ranks who fortunately is under contract. So that's another factor we have to take into account. If someone scores a lot of goals, they come to the attention of higher league teams who are capable of doubling or even trebling their salary. So those are the sort of, it's not just risk, it's sort of opportunity as well for us. Mm. So, you know, I think to go back to your basic question, we're way out west, beyond the middle of nowhere. How can we turn that to an advantage? Yeah. Mm. Once you've exhausted the pool of local players, you've got to look further afield. What does that actually mean?
Mm.
So we're aware of the issues relating to the question, and we need to come up with a series of plans and steps under a strategy to make it work.
It's an interesting point. It's an interesting point because let me just say, if you take the Pro League for a moment, the first team squad is around 26 players. The reserves are around about, you know, depending on second, third, Premier, National League, whatever, are around about 20, 25. Then you've got all the kids coming through from the youth development. Well, the point is, you can't accommodate all of those to play every Saturday in their respective development processes. So you can see why Manchester City did, they've done over 160 million in terms of selling kids on who are never going to play for the club, because they've got the ratio right. But where we are a little bit depleted on that intensity of talent. And if we can grow the methodology of a passing game, and like Exeter have understood it completely, we could take these 17, 18-year-olds and give them men's football, if you like, for a season. And we want to grow those partnerships, David. And feel free that when you're in these, you know, exalted climate areas of some of the big clubs relative to what you do, you know, you could drop the hint. You say, you know, you should have a look at Mosel, because they're adopting kids temporarily for a season to bring them on. Because the other problem that the pro club's got is the parents say, well, if he doesn't get any development, I'm moving him on. Mm-hmm. And this, and parents today are very aggressive on this. They've even got agents for kids that are 16, 17. Mm-hmm. So we are the recipient potentially of the growth and development and building the gene pool for the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. And that is our secret, because again, I want to blow some sun up the derriere of Jake and the department at the moment. They're all about growing people to move them on. And that's a very courageous football strategy, because it's selfless. It's not about self-greed. It's about enhancement. So I'll calm down now, but that's us. That's us.
Yeah. Can I ask Kevin a question? Because it's on the same sort of effects of the actual club itself and the plans side of it. Have you yourself now got sort of like a succession plan in place? Of course, Pablo moving on to Barcelona. You've got the new young lad now that's taken over from Pablo in that. But I mean, where did this all sort of start for you, Kevin? We're doing all the press and that sort of side of the part of the club for Mosel. And did you have a succession plan in mind if Pablo did move on to somewhere else? Maybe not. I don't suppose you thought you'd probably end up at Barcelona, but did you have that succession plan?
We always knew he would move on because he was one of my students. So I'm a former BBC News and Sport producer, but my job the last 6 or 7 years has been a journalism lecturer at Falmouth University and at Marjon in Plymouth. So Pablo's one of those students, and you know, I always knew that when he graduated, he'd go on. I didn't think he would go to Barcelona quite as quickly as he had. You know, I thought it might be a little while before he got there, but you know, he's obviously grand. it was always part of my ambition. When I came back to Cornwall, I was, you know, I'd worked at the BBC, I'd been to, you know, covered a lot of sport, but I'd never actually picked up a camera or used an edit software in anger. I'd always been standing next to the best cameramen and women in the world. And so, because I was having to teach how to use cameras in editing, I wanted to be able to prove I could do it myself. So I took up, I volunteered initially for, as Derek would say, the wrong shape ball. I was with Falmouth Rugby Club for about 4 years. And I still actually do stuff with Cornwall Rugby. And then Jake approached me through one of my students and asked me if I was interested in coming to Mosel, and I was. So I've been there 3 years now doing the media stuff. As far as succession planning is concerned, planning isn't that easy, to be honest with you. Especially because, you know, most people are going to go through the net quite quickly. You know, you expect that they will move on. Ed, who we've got at the moment, I've got a lot of hope for. He approached Pablo, said he wanted to do what he does, and did it very well, very eloquently. And I've already seen in the kind of 4 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks he's been with us, he's already started to get a lot more confidence on camera. And he's very, very, you know, getting very good at interviewing people already. I don't know. I mean, unfortunately, and this is a great, and I'm very, very sorry about this, but the sports journalism course at Falmouth University is closed now, which I think is a great loss, because it was a fantastic course. And, you know, it's absence, I think, is a great miss for Cornwall, not having a sports tourism course. Marjon is thriving and doing well. So maybe the next Pablo comes from Marjon. Whether or not I still be there is another matter, because I'm 60 now, so I think it's semi-retirement. But I love doing it. It's great. Yeah, I always remember when one of my other students graduates. So I had a bad day at Mousel two seasons. I can't remember what match it was, but we'd lost on a Tuesday night, and I was coming home. It might have been a Saturday afternoon. I can't remember now. Anyway, I was coming home, and I was, you know, quite down, deflated because of having lost. It was a terrible night. Turned on the radio, and there was another one of my graduate students reading the news, sports news on Radio 5 Live. And I just got such a kick out of that, just to hearing him.
Yeah. Well done, you. Well done, you.
He pronounced a couple of names wrong, so I sent him a text straight away. Keep him in his place.
But, I mean, it must be fake. I mean, I know I did text you on the day that I heard about Pablo going to Barcelona, but, I mean, you must have been... As I put in the text, you must have been an extremely, extremely proud dad on that occasion.
Yeah. He's done fantastically well. And, you know, to see his progress and his confidence grow and that sort of stuff, that's what makes it worth the while. Me personally, I'm learning as well. You know, just last week, I forgot my tripod last Tuesday night, and I was panicking slightly. But luckily, our assistant groundsman is a keen photographer, so I thought he might have a tripod. Turns out he has got a really top of the notch tripod with a wonderful smooth fluid head on it, which he lent me, and I've now got tripod envy, and I want to go I want to get a new tripod.
Yeah. I love it. As you say, even doing that, you still get that sort of, you know, you still get that sort of knowledge and frustration. I mean, I get frustrated. You know, I mean, they were filming a game at Enfield the other a couple of times, you know, in this Fenix Trophy that they were in. And first time it happened, the stream went wrong. And, you know, I said, but I've got all the gear sitting at home. You just got to ask me. I go into the cupboard, I pull it out, and it's there, ready to go. You know, it got to the second time and it went wrong again. So, but even then, you know, like you say yourself, you know, we've got the new software, you know, the iMovie, the one after the Pro. And I struggle with it. So you sit there and you're trying to work it out and trying to work it out because it's so much different to iMovie. So, you know, even myself, I'm still sort of learning how to sort of ping things together and sitting there watching YouTube videos and stuff like that just to try and work out how it all works.
What I'm luckiest at Mousel, and this is what I say to students, is A, we've got a good story to tell. Every week we've got a story
that
And it's not just the result of the match, but it's often the development of the day or where we are in the narrative of that. And, you know, we're just blessed with wonderful speakers, both in the playing staff, the coaching staff and the volunteers. You know, Mr. Richardson there. You know, I remember the first time I went up to him, slightly nervous, because I was actually told that Brian was quite grumpy by somebody. And I went up to him to ask him if I could ask him a question. And I was slightly nervous. And he came out with the most wonderful answer. And it's never stopped since.
Well,
you talk about you're right, Brian. You're a big brother. That's terrible.
Well, I probably so. Probably so.
Yeah.
I can't imagine me pulling fear up of people.
But you know, Brian, this is a really interesting point, David, that because we're very thrilled about your involvement and to get the DNA of this club, because I'm only a newbie too. I'm what, 2 years, I think. And I'm learning, you know, you learn insights every time and every day. But first of all, succession planning. Jake has written a absolutely phenomenal 10-year succession plan that the club can align with. Now, of course, it's about progress and significant progress to the, you know, to the National League over a 10, 12-year period. And that, of course, is consequential on many developments, sponsorship, financial innovation into the club, and many other things. But what you learn in Cornwall is, you know, we are dreamers a little bit in Cornwall because we're a long way away from things, but it doesn't mean that we can't. And so we have a really impressive 10-year vision for the club. And we've got people. And I'm going to single Brian out for a moment. Brian has got to be at least 5 decades or more with the club, more even. And yet Brian, and there are a number of Brian, and Brian's got the Richardson clan, as we call it, they've all been there 20, 30, 40 years, but they're so about the future. And I think that's very rare in small, isolated sort of geopolitical environments. They're so, so supportive of the journey. And the journey really is to build on their, you know, their sweat equity into the club from where we started to where it is today. I mean, it's mind-blowing, absolutely mind-blowing. And but we haven't even really got traction yet. We're just started. And I want you to feel that. I really want you to feel that.
We're all very, very passionate towards the club, and we have been for years. You know, David might know that, might not know that Tim, who keeps in the background, our youngest son, Jeff's brother, of course, he keeps in the, he's an ex-chairman before Derek, and he does a lot of the, he's done a lot of the grant, getting the grants for us, so he keeps in the background, but him, Jeff, Nicola, of course, Tim's wife, we're all extremely passionate. It was only a few, I'm one of the first ones. I don't want people saying to me, thank you, Brian. Thank you for doing this. Thank you. I'm not that sort of person. And I've told Derek this, and but I accept it. But the greatest accolade, I feel as though I'm okay saying this, but the greatest accolade I had about, I won't say how long ago, because it'll pinpoint the match and everything. But some time ago, a few weeks ago, I had a phone call from our first team manager, Jake. And he said to me, Brian, he said, this was on the morning of the game, actually, I think it was. Yes, it was. He said, Brian, I'd like you to come into the changing rooms, our changing room. He told me minutes before, but I won't say how many minutes, but it was quite close. And I'd like you to stand there and I'd like you to tell the boys briefly, and he mentioned briefly because he knows I can go on a bit, briefly about your passion, your family's passion, and the passion that you all have for the club. And I stood there, and I can do it, you know, I'm used to talking to people and different things. And I stood there, and these lads were looking at me, these players that were going to go out on the pitch in about 15 or so minutes time. And I could see some of their eyes. I get extremely emotional, and I could see in the boys, even Fletcher, the assistant manager, he was looking straight through me, and I could see that the passion was coming from me into them. And I told them that I'm the one with the mouthpiece. I'm the one that they hear. I am the one that they hear from the stands. I'm the old school. I'm 78 now, and in my time, they used to be a lot of verbals from the pit. Good for verbals. Come on, you come on. You don't get a lot of that nowadays, and I feel as though we should. And I said to these boys after I told them my spiel, which I'm not going to go through now. I don't want to embarrass anybody. I told them that you might hear me. You will hear me. I know they hear me because they tell me. But I'm not saying that just for myself. I'm saying these things for these guys that are standing around me. They're a little bit shy of saying stuff like that because they think the person standing next to them will think, well, is that lunatic? What's he shouting at? You know, keep quiet. But I'm talking for those fellas. And basically that was a fantastic accolade that came from Jake for me to do that. That's all the thanks I need.
I'm talking with Jake on Sunday. I'm desperate to find out the information. So hopefully I'll speak to him next weekend. He finished off his interview with me and the two lads on Sunday. And I'm not sure if you saw it, but if it was on camera or off camera, he said, but he had to go as quick as he could. I think he might have even actually been off camera. He was cooking Sunday roast. I'm just curious how the Sunday roast went.
Well, while we're talking, Brian, what we should also tell you, David, is, you know, we are a gene builder, Derek does gene building in potential sponsors that become sponsors. I mean, you've got also Kevin that finds talent and grows it, and grows also a social media to a level that leaves me mind blown. And then now what we've also done is, which is a proud moment really for Brian, because his granddaughter, we've just given her a chance. So she's doing a uni degree in social media, in media studies. And we've given her a request, which is accepted, to do her internship, which is part now, as you know, of any degree, for work experience. And she's so willingly accepted. So we've commissioned her now to do a minimum of 120 hours, which will grow far more than that. And she's so thrilled. And this is a young girl, you know, 18, 19. And you think, well, you'd like to do that. And you're living in Holland, but you've got your grandparents in Cornwall and uncles and aunts and all of that. And I think, so are we punching above our weight? No, we're setting the future. We're all baby boomers. And what we want to do is build the custodianship, so these people that come along can take the club where it should go by destiny. And that's why you're important in this too. And I'm not trying to stroke you on this. We all need help to go to meet the aspirations that we all have. Mm. And Derek is a big thinker, a really big picture thinker, and we need that. And we also need the cautiousness of Andrew. And so the complementary partnership between Andrew and Derek is very, 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 very clever. And then you get the sageness of people like Brian that have seen the journey as well. So we're quite an incredibly eclectic team, but at the heart of it, it is just, let's make the club better while we're living on the planet, and let it be, you know, fit for purpose for others to take on board. But we see the potential. I think that's right, isn't it?
And Derek, really, I'm going to say, I must say about Derek, there's, I remember he started running the club as a business, which is absolutely correct. I was a little bit thoughtful at the time. Is it the right way to go? But absolutely correct what he's done. He's run it. He's gelled us all into, we run it as a business, a non-profit making business, of course. It all plows back in. Yeah. But when I look around there now, around that stadium that we have up there, and we've got the new stand, all of that structure up there now, when I think back, I thought back the other day, 8 years, but it's longer than that since we had that meeting. But, and I think back and I think, well, who could have come into this club as a chairman and altered it so much that this guy, this Scouser from up in Liverpool, has come down here. He's done absolute bloody wonders with it, and we're all very, very proud of him.
I told you, I came down. I've been here 50 years in September. I came down here in 1974 to rob a car.
Yeah, but I mean, when you took over chairmanship, I don't feel that anybody could have done it better than what you have.
So, Derek, how much has it changed then? So, for people like myself and others, you know, how long have you been chairman down at Mousel, and how much has it changed from the day you walked in to up to today?
I've been chairman for about 6 years. I think I've been at the club 6.5 years, it's just changed, hasn't it? We had a nice little ground there when I arrived. It was absolutely lovely. And I was asked to come into the club, and I did that. And I think we've all, it's difficult at first, because when you come into a club, one of the things I think I've always had in the club, there's a lot of people here that have been here a long time, and I think I've always shown great respect. And you've got to try and get them to, you know, share that respect with you. And it's not easy, because it's a village environment, you know. But I think what's changed the club as well is Mousel now is not an old, close-knit community like it used to be. There's a lot of second homes there and lots of new people, outside people, that come to the ground now that have moved into the area. So it's, I think we're getting, because when I was a player at Mousel 47 years ago, when I first came down here, the it was, you had all the locals in the village that came, that volunteered at the club, and we've lost that. But now the new people coming in, it's sort of taken time, but there's quite a few new supporters at the club, which is
incredible,
which is different, you know. You know, it's but the change has been incredible, really, what's happened there. And I think the ground, we've sort of created this ground, and we've got a great match day experience there with the music and the the tee and the terrace is very close to the pitch, so it feels quite compact when you're in there, and it can be, with 300 people in there, it can be a very noisy place, because the people are very close to the pitch, you know, which is which tends not to be. There tends to be a lot of space around non-league football pitches, so it's quite compact, and I think the atmosphere is very good. I think you actually mentioned that, David, when you came, didn't you, about the atmosphere?
Yeah, it was one of those things, as I said, you know, we went to football, you know, we were looking because it was, we'd come down for our anniversary, and we looked at that, and I said to Lynn, I said, look, I want to go to a football match. And I think on that day, I think the game was Truro Plymouth Parkway. And we said, look, well, we'll have a look, see if we can go to that one. And looked and realised it was another 2 hours, 3 hours back from where we were. So we decided, no, I don't fancy that too much to travel up and down in the day. And we just literally just then looking all over the place and just trying to see if there was a local game we could, because I think we were staying in Helston. So we were literally just trying to, you know, just to try and find something. And then saw the game was there. Then we were just trying to check with people where the game was. I think it was a bit of a wet weekend because I think Saltash had their game called off that day as well. And we looked at it and came down. And I think one of the things, I mean, the first thing you remember, of course, is not losing the car down the pothole on the way in.
Yeah.
And then once we got there, it was just that feeling of walking into a ground, and especially up in the area where I am, you walk into a football ground and the first thing you can smell is fried onions. You know, it's that sort of smell the minute you walk into a ground round. Fried onion smell. And of course you walked into the ground, and of course the first thing you could smell was Cornish pasties.
Yeah.
It was always a lovely smell to, you know, when you walk in.
Yeah.
And then to be greeted by the likes of, you know, Andrew, and I think Brian as well on the day, you know, when we came in, and it, as soon as you walked into the ground, it was almost as if someone came along. And I've spoken to other people that have been down on a visit well, and they've all said exactly the same thing. And the minute you actually walked into the stadium and somebody come up and approached you from, you know, the Mousel team, you just felt like somebody had come along, got hold of their two hands and just gone like that, and just sort of given you a call and made you feel as if you were more than welcome to be there. And as I said, you know, standing behind the back of the goal, and, you know, Missy saw the drums and she went, oh, no, not drums. Do you know what I mean? Because, you know, especially up this way, no one knows how to play a drum properly up here. And, you know, and it was just fantastic. I mean, from start to finish, do you know what I mean? You know, the grounds were with his dog, the people, you know, the dogs walking up to the fans, and they're chucking the tennis ball on the pitch, and the dog sprinting off after it and all this sort of stuff. And then, of course, when the game started, and how brilliant the guys are, and I say this all the time, how brilliant the guys playing your drums are. They're just absolutely outstanding. And it was such a tuneful experience rather than just somebody just whacking a drum. and it was just such just a really, really lovely sort of family atmosphere from the minute you walked in, and, you know, well, how pressed the ground as well.
An advert's on both sides of the boards, David.
Yeah, I say it all the time.
Yeah.
I tell them all the time.
When I do hospitality, David, for my sins, I have to do my stint in the car park. because my pal and best mate Derek shoves me out there, so it tells you really is he my best pal. All right, so you know, and you welcome them all and say park up there, please. Then I swap with one or the other. I go into hospitality, but that for me is probably one of the greatest opportunities to listen not only to your competitors but what's happening in the marketplace of football. And the first thing they say is over, and we are very prideful about one thing. We lay on a good spread at halftime, as well as the commitment to the meal for the players and the visitors and the VIPs at the end. We're very prideful about that. I'm very much verbose about that, because I just hear them saying, thank you, thank you, thank you. This is wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. But you have a chat to them and they say, you know, there's something very odd about your club. You, in a way, you're not a football club. You're like a community ambassador. You welcome, you know, it's like being warmly welcomed like a long-lost relative. And he said, you don't actually try hard at it. It must be part of the Corners DNA. I've had that said to me so many times. And then they sit down and then they pour their heart out about ground grading, about all the things that they've got to do that are struggling with, and are you doing that? And we're very honest. We say, well, you know, we've got our challenges, and we're stressed about so many things, and you know, da 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 da. And some of them don't leave the hospitality at half time. But what we also do is we've got people that come in from the club, have been a long time, and they come in and say hello, and I say a chat to them. And I know this sounds like a little bit of trivia, but when you do that week in, week out, and then they just so embrace us, and they say, you know, I've really loved coming here today. And I think for me, when I hear that, I think, wow, what a club, because I'm a newbie, I have to say, I've only been there 24 months or more. When I hear that, and I think, not once, but twice, but all the time, you think, this club does so many good things. It's just unbelievable. Now, I'm not trying to, you know, rose tint the glass on this, but it's true. It's absolutely true. And you know, I sit there sometimes, and some of the executives, and I take like a corporate confession from them. Oh, we haven't done that yet. We're really panicking. We're probably going to get in trouble, because we are, in a metaphoric sense, we don't embrace people with prejudice. We just embrace them. And I think I if someone said, sum up Mosel for me, I said the DNA of Mosel is we're all different, we're all eclectic, we all respect each other, we have our differences, but our goal is always uniformly the same. It's one and all, and we share the love. And you know, I think baby boomers, as all of us are also the best recipe for a football department full of youngsters, because these kids today are in a different world to what we were. And I think we the Bryans, have been around a long time, the Bricks and everybody else, we share a bit of love. And do you know what? That's the most powerful thing you can do to a football group. It's the most powerful, because these kids set high expectations on themselves, especially those that have been dumped from the academy, because, you know, you can imagine the psychological trauma of that. And, you know, we're saying, come on, you know, you've got to work your tail off and let's get you back there. No other club does that. No other club does that. That's our ethos. Grow them and move them on. The trouble is, David, you don't want them.
David.
Yes, mate.
As you know, I'm stepping down very soon. I just wanted to reflect on a couple of things.
Yeah, I was going to give you the last word, because we're running out of time. So I was going to give you the last word. So I'm glad you came in then.
When I first discovered the club by accident in 2015, there were 46 spectators. That was my first match. This last Saturday, there were 339.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a statistic that says quite a lot. So in that time, the club has moved from step 7 to the playoffs in step 4. That's an absolutely incredible journey. And it's been made by a whole host of people doing all sorts of things, including the social, emotional, as Paul says, but also the practical, hard yards on and off the pitch. It's not been an easy journey.
No.
I think everyone connected with the club, especially us older folks,
Yeah.
Believe in the concept of a legacy. We want to be able to leave behind something that is better than when we started, for other people then to take up the baton and take it forward.
Absolutely. And that's why we invited you, David, because we think you've got that in your DNA.
We'll do, we certainly do our best, because as I say, you know, I'm miles away. I think I put a post out the other day saying if I could move to Cornwall tomorrow, I would.
No, don't do that. We want you where you are. We want you where you are, because we want that network coming our way.
Yeah, but don't worry about losing Andrew. He's not going to be. He's still going to be a big Mousel fan, and he's going to be on. I'll think of something up to keep him around the club.
I'm going to be telling Derek to pull his finger out. That's what he means.
He's going to be on the new advisory board.
Yeah. So, David, quickly, are you happy with everything? Where you're seeing, what you thought and heard tonight, and what we're all about? Are you happy?
Listen, as I said to you, Wednesday night, I've got to do commentary for, I'm going to be doing commentary for Enfield Town against Wingate Finchley. It's probably going to be the hardest commentary of the whole season, because there'll be an iPad just to the left of me, and I'll be refreshing it, and I'll be trying to concentrate on one game while commentating on another. Listen, but for me, to be part of the family, and that's what I call it, is I'm just over the moon. I can't even tell you how excited and how over the moon I am. And a massive thank you to Derek, to yourself, to Andrew, to Brian, of course, to the superb Kevin as well, and everybody that's there, because I'm looking forward to it, and hope that we can push you, help push you from where we are, and push it even further as much as we can.
Yeah.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, David. Thank you,
David. Thanks, gents.
Listen, guys, a massive thank you for joining us tonight. I really do appreciate it. We wish you all the very, very best for Wednesday. I wish you, if you pass my onto Jake and the boys as well. And we do wish you all the very, very best at Froome on Wednesday night. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time with the Repos show, because, of course, next week, everybody will be celebrating. Hopefully, Mousel are going to be celebrating next Monday night as well. There'll be promotion and people standing in the same leagues. And, of course, it'll all be all over the place next week. But we're going to be back in 2 weeks' time for the final show of the season. And hopefully, we're trying to put together and trying to see if we can't get the three big chiefs on the show in 2 weeks' time, in the likes of Nick Robinson, Mark, and of course Dave Martin as well, all the three chairmen of the prospective leagues at step 3 and step 4. We'll try. I'll sort of send some texts around, see whether they can make it or not. But from me and from everybody, a massive thank you yet again for watching tonight. Over 400 people watching live tonight, and over one.
David, I've got, if there's anybody out there, can I just say, I've got to get this award to Jamie Vardy on Wednesday, if we can, please. Does anyone out there can help us?
I say, over 1,600 people have watched some part of the show tonight. 414 people watch it live. So fantastic figures again tonight. So a massive appreciation for that. As I said, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. I'll be back. Andrew will be back in 2 weeks' time as well, when we go back down the mouse hole, of course, in 2 weeks' time. But from me, good night.
Superb, David.
All right,
superb.
Thank you.
Thanks, gents.
Thank you. Cheerio, David.
Thank you.